Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Rabbinical Assembly and Jewish Women International Conference Call with M.K. Zippy Livni. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Rabbi Julie Schoenfeld. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Welcome, everybody. We are delighted to have approximately 75 Jewish women leaders from all over North America registered for the call today. I'm Julie Schoenfeld, Executive Vice President of the Rabbinical Assembly, the community of conservative and Masorti rabbis serving around the world. My partner and colleague in organizing this important gathering is Susan Turnbull, President of Jewish Women International. We hope that today's gathering will be the first in a series of endeavors designed to engage Jewish women leaders to have the greatest impact. I will offer a few words of introduction to M.K. Livni, our esteemed speaker, who will share with us her important perspective. At that point, Susan Turnbull will call on four of our colleagues who will offer questions: Kathy Manning, Chair, the Jewish Federations of North America; Lori Moskowitz, U.S. Campaigns Director for the One Campaign and JWI Board Member; Gail Yamner, President, the Joint Action Committee for Political Affairs; and Jennifer Laszlo Mizrahi, founder and president, the Israel Project. We are privileged to hear from M.K. Zippy Livni, leader of Israel's Kadima Party since 2008. She was first elected to the Knesset in 1999 as a member of the Likud Party, educated at Bar-Ilan University, where she received a degree in law. She worked for the Mossad as a young woman and had a successful law practice. In 2006, she became Deputy Prime Minister and has served as Minister of Justice and Minister of Absorption in the Knesset. She has been outspoken on the need for more and better Jewish education in Israeli society and in opposition to the increasingly coercive nature of Jewish life in Israel. Zippy Livni has traveled the Jewish world to build bridges and strengthen relationships between the world Jewish community and Israel. She is the only Israeli politician bringing a broader global view of the central importance of Jewish culture and values to Israel's future. She presents a vision that encompasses not only immediate political concerns, but enduring concerns of the future character of our people. M.K. Livni, I now turn this over to you.
Thank you. Thank you. It is a great opportunity for me to share with you my views about the future of the State of Israel, and it is symbolic since we are just a few days before Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and we need, to speak about what are our hopes and vision for the future. And I believe that next year can be different, but yet we need to make decisions for the future of the state. Which are not only connected to the future of the State of Israel, but this relates also, I believe, to the future relations between Israel and the world Jewry. One relates to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. I believe that it is an Israeli interest to end the conflict in accordance to the idea of two states for two peoples, since we need to keep the values of Israel as a Jewish and democratic state living in harmony. And in order to do so, we need to have basically a Jewish majority. And the meaning is that we need to divide the land, the historical land of Israel between Jordan River and Mediterranean Sea, into two different states, that each state gives an answer to the national aspiration of its people. And of course, we need to take in consideration and to make it part of the agreement with all the guarantees, Israel's security and other parameters that are very important for the future of the state. This is one decision that needs to be made. The other what we are now facing is the new demonstrations in the streets, and this is about Israel's economy and society. Since Israel changed since the establishment of the state from a socialist state, from a completely capitalist state. And I believe that what we saw in the streets in the last few weeks are young people, Zionists, living in Israel, serving in the army. They are highly educated. They are working, pay their own taxes, but yet they feel that the priorities of Israel are not the right priorities in terms, or not the just priorities. They feel that the burden of security and economy is just on them, and we need to change this in terms of education. And I believe that everyone needs to serve whether in the army or in what we call national or civil service in order to contribute to Israel society. And we need to give equal rights to each and every citizen in Israel. And this is also not only because Israel is a democracy, but I believe that this is part of our Jewish values as well. And these few words that I just shared with you need to be translated into real action plan. Now, just while we are talking, there is a press conference of Trachtenberg, who was nominated by the government to make different priorities, though I believe that since in Israel politics, and especially in this coalition, you have the ultra-Orthodox and other sectors being represented there, I don't see, or it's hard for me to believe that we are going to see real changes in terms of priorities. The third, and maybe this is something which are of your interest as well, decision, is to make a decision and to redefine what is Israel as a Jewish state for us. And it's not enough to demand the international community, the Arabs, the Palestinians, to say that Israel is a Jewish state without real understanding what it is for us. And when I say for us, I mean not only the Israelis, but also the world Jewry. And I believe that the substance should put the perspective from the national point of view and not the ultra-Orthodox or, unfortunately, what we saw in the last few months in the parliament from some kind of new racism that enters the debates in Israel. And the meaning is that Jewish state means a homeland of the Jewish people. It means that the law of return is the first article of the future constitution. It means the symbols of the state, the Magen David, the Nefesh Yehudi. It means in the public sphere and not in the private sphere, some symbols that Shabbat is the day off and Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are different, no commerce, and something that connects us all. And it's not just from a technical point of view, but something that needs to be part of the education in Israel and something that connects us all in an understanding that, as an example, in the next few days, all of us here in Israel and the world Jewry are going to be connected to in doing the cheshbon nefesh, personal and collective, and also making decisions for the future. We need to respect each and everyone that translates his own Judaism in a different manner and respect different streams in Judaism. And I believe that, or I know that the trends now in Israel are very problematic because I was talking about education, and you have in Israel different schools in which you have children. Some of them are learning in Hebrew, some in Arabic, some in Yiddish, and it's completely different substance, different vision, different values. And unfortunately, there is also a new dispute in Israel, what is the source of authority of Israel, whether it's the law or the constitution and the judges or Supreme Court, or whether it's going to be an halachic state and the rabbis are those that are the source of authority. And we need to address it, the sooner the better, because our failure to make decisions in the past led to a situation, or can lead, hopefully not, to a situation in which Israel, while we are talking about one state for two peoples, so two states for two peoples, Israel can change into one state to different tribes living together here in Israel and another tribe of Jewish communities outside of Israel without real vision that connects us all. And I believe that we need to address this the sooner the better.
Susie, would you like to begin the call for questions?
Yes. Thank you so much, M.K. Livni. After hearing you this past summer, Rabbi Schoenfeld and I discussed the importance of bringing women's voices to the forefront. And that's why this call is taking place, and that's why we were so proud to be able to host you this morning. One of our priorities at JWI is to foster a healthy environment for Jewish women leaders and the empowerment of women and girls. You have shown all of us why your leadership is so valued. We appreciate your insight and hope that together all of us can work together to foster cooperation and action. We've asked women representing a wide array of voices in our community to pose questions to you. We will begin with Kathy Manning, who is the chair of the Jewish Federations of North America, and
yes,
I'm proud to say is one of our 2011 JWI Women Watch. Kathy?
Great.
Susie, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good, because I was having trouble getting out of the silent mode. M.K. Livni, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today. It's always a pleasure to hear you and to hear your very refreshing voice and perspective on what's going on in Israel. I wonder if you could share with us your thoughts on what kinds of policies you think the Israeli government should or could put into place to address some of the issues that were raised by the recent tent protests, and what might be realistic given the current government coalition?
I think that what needs to be changed is, at first, education needs to be given free from younger age, because now it starts at the age of six, and it's not free because there are... what is public now in Israel is not enough, and the public education is not good. So it needs to be started sooner, I mean in a younger age, and needs to be with a better quality. Because when we are talking about Israel as a democracy, equal rights means that we need to give more for places and people and children that have less. And in Israel, the gaps between different parts of the society are huge, and this is something that needs to be bridged. And I also believe that what we call core issues or Limudei Liba, the same vision or the same subjects need to be educated in each and every school, not only the public school, but also the private schools for ultra-Orthodox and others. The last thing is not going to be accepted by this government because of the ultra-Orthodox. Another thing that I believe needs to be done is to invest in equal or serving not only in the army but also national service or public service, and this is something that needs to be obligatory and need to be financed as well. Just a moment. Hello, sorry. Hello?
Hello, we're still
okay.
Here.
Yes, okay, I'm sorry. National, as I said, national service or serving in the army, I believe is something which is very important, but I don't see this government adopting something like this. Talking about housing, we need also to have public housing, something that used to be in the past in Israel, but the government doesn't invest in this anymore. And also not for those that cannot afford housing, but also for young people. And in order to reduce the prices of housing, the government needs to use the land authority in order to give land in even free in the Negev and other places, but also to reduce the prices in other parts of Israel. I think that we are going to hear some of this. This is something that the government can do. I also believe that we need, when we privatize or make outsourcing for public services, I believe that this is something that can be done as long as the responsibility for giving these services lies on the shoulders of the government. I mean that the government is responsible even when you make this outsourcing. And I believe that we need to redefine the relations between the government and the municipalities of the local authorities, because now nobody knows who's responsible for what. And I think that this is something that needs to be addressed. And last thing that it's clear to me that the government is going to do, and it is important, is to reduce the prices by changing the equation. Now the government is reducing tax on companies and on what we call direct taxing. And while doing so, the government takes more indirect taxes. So water, fuel, and everything now costs. These prices are very high now, and it needs to be reduced by changing the different sides of the equation. I mean, to stop reducing the direct taxes and to reduce the indirect taxes.
Thank you very much. That's very helpful.
Thank you. We'll next have a question from Lori Moskowitz of the One Campaign.
Great. Hi, MK Livni. Thank you for taking the time this afternoon. And, I appreciate your comments on so many levels. I spent 6 months living in Israel last year, and I appreciate, your vision for both two states and your vision for, sort of your thinking about how do we get to, a peaceful democratic majority for the long term for Israel. And so in that vein, I'd love to hear your thoughts today on both, what can we do right now with this impasse to move towards a two-state solution? And also, because it's related, how do you lead Kadima there, and how do you think about building, a government that can help us get there?
In order to change the trend of this coalition, there's a need, or the positions and the policies, there's a need for new elections in Israel. But before having that, I offered Netanyahu more than once to change the coalition. I said to him before he went to New York that instead of, or that the most important thing is not to make speeches, but to relaunch negotiations with the Palestinians. And in doing so, if he worries from a political price, in doing so, I'm going to give him any safety net, political safety net, which is needed, because I believe that this is the most important thing to do. Unfortunately, this coalition is the choice of Netanyahu, and in the end, this is a decision that it needs to make. The situation is that we negotiated with the Palestinians, but for 2.5 years since the establishment of this government, we see this kind of stagnation, stalemate, and there is a deterioration in the situation. Israel is being more isolated, and this can be stopped, I believe, by relaunching negotiations with the Palestinians. It is also clear to me that without real trust, the Palestinians are not going to enter the negotiations room. And Netanyahu needs to rebuild this trust between him and them. And the unfortunate situation, as we all saw last weekend, is that we have Netanyahu and Abu Mazen, two leaders, talking to their own peoples, not talking to each other. And I think that this can be an historical mistake for all of us.
Great, thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from Gail Yamner of the Joint Action Committee.
Thank you so much for taking this time. I'd like to build on that question. We have been consumed here in this country with watching and listening to the different speeches. What I wondered is, as women, we are wonderful communicators and we're wonderful networkers. How can we use these skills to educate our communities here in America on the importance of a peaceful two-state solution? We hear so much conflicting information. What talking points can you give us to bring back to our communities here?
I think that what was clear in the different speeches in the United Nations is that both of them were telling their own story, or the story of their own people. And ending the conflict is not making the decision who has more rights on the land. The truth is that we have this tiny piece of land between Jordan River and Mediterranean Sea. The Jewish people believe, and I also believe, in the rights of the Jewish people on the entire land. And for me, everything is the land of Israel. But for the Palestinians, everything is Palestine. So the idea was not who has more rights on the land, and whether it started from the Bible thousands of years ago, or this is not the main issue. The main issue for us as Jews is how to keep the values of Israel as a state, homeland of the Jewish people and the democracy, living in harmony. And in order to do so, we need to accept and adapt the idea of two states for two peoples, not as a favor to the Palestinians, but as part of our own interest. So in according to this understanding, I believe that you need to support two states for two peoples. It's not against Israel, but this is the only way to preserve the values and the vision of Israel as homeland of the Jewish people and the democratic state. It is also clear that we need to take care for Israel's security. So we need to have as part of the agreement an understanding that Israel's security needs are going to be taken in consideration. The role of the United States is also Israel, that our security needs are going to be kept. And it is also clear that Hamas is not a partner for peace. Because Hamas is an extreme Islamic ideology they have as an organization this kind of ideology that is not willing to accept our right to live here. But on the other side, you have Abu Mazen and his group. They are fighting for their own national aspiration and the establishment of their own state. So basically, the dialogue should be not trying to convince that our narrative is the right narrative, but trying to convince that according to our own vision, we need to accept the idea of two states as long as the meaning is that this is the end of conflict. It ends the claims or the national claims of the Palestinians from Israel or the Jewish people, and this ends also or affects the ability of the Arab world to live with Israel and accepting Israel in the Middle East. I want to say also something that it is connected, because unfortunately you can hear some in Israel and outside of Israel talking in terms of two states for two peoples, but yet speaking about the need to expand settlements. This is wrong. Because when the decision is to divide the land, we need to take in consideration as part of the future borders of the State of Israel what we call blocks of settlements. Because these are realities on the ground, and most of the Israelis that are living on the outside of the or the outside of what was Israel before 67 are taking only few percentage of the West Bank, and this, while defining the border, we need to take them as part of Israel. But when the focus is on dividing the land, building more houses in places that are not going to be part of Israel, this is not important. This is not part of the decision. And I believe that part of the misunderstanding of Israel is because on one hand we are talking about our dream to live in peace, which is true, and that we want to and we are willing to give up part of the land in order to do so. But yet, when we continue in building in the settlements, I believe that the message is that we are talking, on one hand, one thing, but doing something else. And I believe that this leads to frustration and also to mistrusting the Israeli leaders that they really want peace.
Thank you. That's very helpful. We'll be sure to take that back to our communities. Thank you.
Thank you so very much. And our next question is from Jennifer Leslie Mizrahi from the Israel Project.
Shana Tova.
Shana Tova.
It's good to be with you. Wanted to ask a question. As a woman leader, you are the most prominent female politician in Israel. And just now you outlined some very positive things that you would like to do for Israel in terms of education, national service, public housing, and land use. But when you're seen in the media as the most visible woman in Israeli life, it's generally saying that this prime minister or one of the former prime ministers should resign. How is it that, how can you put more of your positive messages into the media, and how do you think that reflects on Israeli women to not see more positive messages out there in the media?
You know, as the head of the opposition, I need to be both. On one hand, to criticize the government, and the other is to keep the understanding that we are the alternative for the future. So being opposition, maybe this is talking negative, but being the alternative is talking positive, and to share with the Israelis and with others what is the vision of the State of Israel according to my views, and this is what I try to do. But I don't know whether I completely understood the question.
Well, I just feel that you are the most visible woman in all of Israel today. So how does that manifest your thinking as you manage your public image as a role model for Israel in terms of what women can and should do and for Jewish women around the world?
I see. In fact, you know that I entered politics because of my aspiration and need to work and to end the conflict with the Palestinians, which is something that drives me into politics. But yet, I discovered by being there that things that for me are obvious are not obvious for young women in Israel. Since for me it was obvious that in order to do what I believe need to be done, I need to be the prime minister. But I discovered during the campaign, the election campaign, that for others it's not that obvious. Not only for men, but also for some women. That for them, because we are facing all these security needs and the decisions are in terms of, peace, hopefully, and war, unfortunately, some of them think that this is the role of men and not women. But during the elections, I discovered that by doing what is natural for me, I give strength and power to these women, and they are strengthening me. And not only, and also I could see it also in Arab villages in Israel, for my surprise. And also, I had a great meeting with ultra-Orthodox women that basically we don't share the same vision about state and religion and so on, but yet we could find a way to discuss the role of women in the family, but also in decision making in Israel. So now I am part of something that maybe was not my basic intention by entering politics and by campaigning for office, but it's part of me now. And for me, it's a bless that more and more women now try to enter politics. You know that Labour Party also voted for a woman. And I, you know, there are those saying, okay, now there is another woman in politics, so maybe you are going to act one against the other. And they say, oh, no, I don't believe that, you know, there is a proverb saying that 10 cabins of beauty came to the land. So I don't think that 10 parts of 10% of success came to the land, and the men took 9, and we should divide to ourselves just 1% of success. I believe that this is something that we need to understand, that every woman can be a real success in politics and in leading Israel, and this is what I try to do now.
Thank you.
Susie, so I think we will turn to you now to close the call for us. Thank you so much, MK Livni, for what have been very informative and inspiring words, and for taking so much time. Susie, we'll turn this back to you.
Yes, thank you so much. This afternoon, you really shared your serious and thoughtful vision. We asked you to speak because we believe you are a role model. Here in the United States, we only have 17% of the House and the Senate and with women leaders, and we're hoping that we can expand our numbers here as well. Thank you for your honesty and your challenge to all of us to work hard for our common goals. On behalf of JWI and the Rabbinical Assembly, Rabbi Schoenfeld and I thank you for your generosity. We broached a number of issues today, and there's still so many challenges ahead. We hope that today's call is the beginning of an important dialogue for all of us. As you're celebrating the coming holidays, we know that all of you will be contemplating many aspects of your personal lives. We hope you'll also consider how we as Jewish women can come together for our community. If you have any thoughts, please share them with Rabbi Schoenfeld and me, or me. And the last thing I need to say to all of you is that all of us are wishing you a healthy and happy new year. L'Shana Tova to all of you. Thanks so much.
Shana Tova.
Shana Tova.
Shana Tova. Thanks. Thank you.
Bye-bye.